The Choose Love movement offers no-cost solutions that keep our kids safe, providing them with the skills and tools they need to flourish. Join us in our mission to create the world we want to live in, one that's connected and compassionate. Check us out at ChooseLoveMovement.org. Together, we can choose love.
Well, it's really great to have you here. And I am an aminal, Jesse called animals aminal. So I am definitely an aminal lover. You know, I made a decision to raise my boys on a farm, and just our lives were filled with different kinds of animals, and they still are. I'm looking out over my front yard now, and I've got chickens and horses and multiple dogs and a nice red barn. It's like my dream come true. Animals just make us happy, don't they?
They sure do. I can't tell you how many smiles I made yesterday. And I tell the kids, a big part of my mission in life is to make the world a better place. And what better way to make the world a better place than by making people happy? And animals, as you said, they make people happy. Nature makes people happy. I take people on nature walks regularly. And I work with a lot of special needs kids and adults. And I do a lot of nature walks with the local land trust, Lewisboro Land Trust. They get a grant to bring certain populations that don't necessarily get out into the woods and get a chance to take a walk. And special needs folks sometimes obviously fit into that. So I've worked with schizophrenic, one group of adults that all have something in common. Their common denominator is schizophrenia. And I can't tell you how much fun we have had walking in the woods. I have to get them calm, comfortable, and help them to know that I'm their guide and I'm going to get them through this safely. And then once I have that, gosh, what I'm giving them is a skill that could last them a lifetime. And what is that skill? Taking a walk out in the woods, you know, on a path, you know, where people go so that you know that you're in a safe place, arboretums. So we do, you know, programs with the animals, but we also take people out into nature, which as a local naturalist, that's what I love to do the most. And giving somebody the confidence to go out and do it on their own. And that's part of the problem that I have with some of the groups that I'm working with is that they have certain challenges that make them less likely to go and do it on their own. But doing it with a group gives them the confidence to go out and take advantage of these places themselves. And it's no different than the programs that I do with the middle school kids when I take them out in Stanford in an inner city environment to the Arboretum, where they're scared to be in the woods. They've not been in the woods. They're fine in the city, which could be a scary environment for others, but bring them out into nature and these children are afraid. Well, so too are these adults that I'm working with. But what a valuable experience it is for them. And if they can then go and duplicate that on their own, this can is proven the medical benefits of bringing down heart rate and helping us to be calmer and happier human beings. So it's very much what I try to do with all that I'm doing with Animal Embassy, whether it's bringing animals into a school or to an assisted living facility. I work with Lavelle School for the Blind in the Bronx, where these children have many challenges, some of them far beyond being blind. They have other disabilities that'll make it impossible for them to live independently. That doesn't mean that they can't have happy lives and fulfilled lives. And so to be able to go in to a school where kids have such extreme challenges and help them to smile, gosh, this makes my day a better day. So anyway, we do a lot of diverse things with our animals that we rescue and adopt as ambassadors, and then just bringing people out into nature, which is something everybody can do, and they don't need me to take them there. But if I can take them there the first time, and then that gives them the confidence to do it again, awesome.
But you know, it's interesting. You talked about taking hikes as a skill. And I think some people that are listening are thinking that's not a skill. That is just something that anybody can do, but it's so fascinating that, you know, even the tool of self-awareness and then social awareness of others and what's going on around us can be used. Mindfulness, when you're on a trail, of really being in the present moment, not allowing your mind to hijack you and be in the past or fear for the future while you're having this experience, just getting the full benefit out of it by being present. that's a skill that we practice, whether we're on a trail or whether we're having an interaction with someone else or whether we're at the grocery store, every moment of every day. That's kind of the thing that we're doing, is working on our social and emotional skills. And you're talking about that too, because nature is part of that. And it's really important for us to be out in nature. And I think we're learning more and more about the benefits, and during this mental health crisis, for all ages, not just our children, but for the big kids too, this could really be something that could be helpful for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I find that bringing the animals in to the school, whether I'm in a preschool, an elementary school, a middle school, or a high school, or a college, and I do them all, there's ways that I can reach everyone with these animals, because one of the things that I'm sharing with them is my compassion, my empathy. So I'm being a role model at every one of those levels for these students. And the key is, and I know this is so important to your movement, is the language that we're using. And that's really important. We have to be able to reach our audience and make sure that we're using appropriate language to reach them. And I can't use the same language for my preschool that I'm going to use for my college.
So interesting. So I'm going to read a small summary of what Animal Embassy is. Animal Embassy specializes in both live and online educational and interactive experiences for students of all ages, varying needs, and special abilities. Program offerings enable students to connect with the natural world in a nurturing and safe environment through online animal visits, wildlife artifact exhibits, and digital slide presentations. That's a lot. And I went on your website and you have programming for every age and stage, which is really incredible. Can you tell us a little bit about how do you, and you know, people are listening to this podcast from all over the world, really. Is there a possibility of having an animal and nature encounter while you're sitting in four walls and, you know, chairs that are facing the front in a classroom setting?
Absolutely. And I believed this long ago when I worked at the Maritime Aquarium. I very intentionally scarlet cross-trained myself, and growing up in the same area, you know, the Maritime Aquarium.
Absolutely.
Sound Waters in Stanford, Maritime Aquarium in Norwalk, Stanford Museum and Nature Center, Darien Nature Center. These were the places where my knowledge and skills in this department incubated, was at those places. And then I took all of that and channeled it into what I created with Animal Embassy. And it was really... I felt imperative that I created Animal Embassy for a variety of reasons. Number one, I had all these animals that I rescued and adopted starting back in high school at the Darien High. I was rescuing and adopting animals. So I've been caring for animals that were other people's responsibilities since high school. So I had to figure out a way to make this my job. And Animal Embassy came about really because of that. I saw a need. I started rescuing animals. Nobody wanted these animals. None of the places that I worked at would take them. And so there was a niche that needed to be filled. I filled it. Then I had to figure out, how do I continue this, right? I was an educator, so that was important to me. So I'm going to do education. I planned on that, you know, early on in life, and cross-trained myself with big cats, venomous snakes, bears, wolves, and marine life and local critters. So I had accomplished that before I was 25, worked with all those different animals, and then needed to travel, go see these places where these animals live, work with the local people to get to learn about the animals and their natural habitats, and then parlay all this together in something that can reach everyone, because it was important to me. If I want to make a difference, if I want to have an impact, this can't be for those who can't afford it. This needs to be for everyone. So what did everyone mean to me back then? Well, it meant young and old. All right. That was everyone. And it meant urban, rural. Okay. I want to work with those that can't afford it and those that can afford it. We grew up in Darien, where people had plenty of resources, but we had the city of Stanford, the city of Norwalk, where there were plenty of kids that didn't have much of anything. I wanted to be able to reach them too. I wanted to provide them with the same positive message, the same positive experience through animals that I had rescued and adopted that weren't given the proper care that they deserved, helping these kids to see that there's somebody who does care, helping all kids to see that we can make a difference. I rescued my first animal when I was 3 years old. It was a yellow spotted salamander on Seven Settlers Trail in Darien, Connecticut. Children can make a difference. And I know that. And Scarlett, you know that.
Yes.
They need to know that too. And they need to know that they're loved and cared for. And that can be done through words. Words can be sent online. And if you include that with a live interaction with somebody that's got really cool animals on the other side of it, kids watch videos. Kids watch movies
yeah.
about animals. They watch nature shows. The Wildcrats are amazing. These men have been educating children. I'm sure that you know them, with a family that loves animals. I know when I'm talking to a child that watches the show. They know their words. They know these adaptations backwards and forwards. They can tell me what a gavial is and how many grown-ups know that a gavial is an endangered crocodilian species from India. But I got six-year-old kids that can tell me this. So these children are sponges. I don't need to tell you this, obviously. I don't have my own children, but I've been working with them for years, and I intentionally cross-trained myself so I can work with any age group. And I did it online extensively during the pandemic. Unfortunately, it forced people there.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw it first, Scarlett, when I worked at the Maritime Aquarium. They had an amazing program called the Jason Project. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Jason Project. Have
No,
you heard of it?
I haven't.
Well, it started a long time ago, and it was a way for scientists to bring Robert Ballard, a famous marine biologist, kind of like the Jacques Cousteau, who you would remember, I would imagine, from our time. He's like the modern day Jacques Cousteau. And he did this amazing program where he was bringing kids to his research projects all over the world virtually. And this man was doing this when I worked at the Maritime Aquarium, which was over 20 years ago. And people would go to the Norwalk movie theater was one of the hubs. And then there were other hubs too that schools could take their kids to. These kids were operating remotely operated vehicles from the Norwalk movie theater in other parts of the world through this Jason Project. And I thought, this is unbelievable. I've traveled extensively around the world to photograph and learn about endangered species. So when I go to Africa, I'm thinking, God, wouldn't it be great if I could have classes joining me for this adventure? When I went to India for the tigers, I felt that way. When I went to Brazil for jaguars, I felt that way. When I went for butterflies in the mountains of Mexico, I just don't have the framework, unfortunately, to do that. But when I'm going in these places, I want to share it. So I do it as best I can online. But gosh, wouldn't it be cool if I could do what was done with that Jason program, where kids could come with me. I have a relationship with the class, and then come with me on an adventure, not really, but virtually. So that's who knows, you know, that could be for the future. But online programming, where I am right now, this is where I would do the online programming. And I know that you folks out there can't see this, but it's my studio, and it's in the Animal Embassy building, where I have my rescued and adopted animals on my property in North Salem, New York. We've got 3 acres of land out back, and I've got a whole building for the animals right next to my house. So my day starts here, Scarlett, and my day ends here. And a lot of the middle is spent here too on many days, unless I'm out at a school. It's part of why I'd love to do more online programming, because I'd love to be here mm-hmm. with my animals all day and educating globally. Gosh, this is a dream come true. Not because I'm lazy and don't want to go outside, because I do, but because I want to reach more people. And my goal has been to have a global impact. I tell kids all the time, Scarlett, I want to change the world. And then I'll let it sit for a second. And then I want them to think about, gosh, that's a lofty goal, isn't it? Well, look, it's not hard. Everybody can do it. Everybody does do it. And we all did it when we were born. That's when we did it for the very first time. Mm. And now we've got choices to make.
Mm.
How do we want this world to be? And it's mine and it's yours. And I want these kids to feel that way, that it's theirs. I want them to love it. I want them to own it. And I want them to take care of it. And that involves nature. You can't really, I don't believe, fully love something if you don't know it. So me educating kids about animals, about their wild neighbors, about the natural world, we're a part of that natural world, but too many of us don't even get that. So we're wrecking it because we don't even understand how we impact it. So I don't want to, you know, beat kids over the heads with, we must do this, we must do that. I want to empower kids to plant seeds for the future. I want to empower kids to take footprints from nature. Don't take animals from nature. I want to empower kids to love their pet if they have one, and don't call it a pet. It's part of your family. Love it like that. Know that you're the parent to your pet, and I think you're going to love it and care for it. Kids know what this means. And I tell them this all the time. I'm the parent to my pets. But no, I don't say pets. I'm the parent to my animals. I love them. I take care of them. It's my job to keep them happy. It's my job to keep them healthy. It's my job to keep them safe. They know what this means. And so I do my best to do that for every one of my animals. And they then see that. They feel it. They hear it in my program. And then I hope they go home and emulate it. And then I hope they also will become good stewards to their community and the environment. So, Scarlett, I do believe that I can do that very well online and in person, and I love both.
Well, it's funny because anybody who's listening knows exactly why we were introduced by my sister-in-law's brother, by the way. Hey, Phil, thanks so much for this introduction.
Hey, Phil.
and welcome Nico, their new son.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, because I mean, listening to you, it's exactly the way that I feel as well. I want to change the world, and we can't wait for other people to do it for us. This is our life, our communities, our homes, our one life that we have. We need to show up to it with our best self. And that doesn't mean, you know, on the other end of this, I'm holding up my phone and using social media to express our opinions and our likes and dislikes. It's about literally putting that down and getting out into nature and getting, first of all, getting up and moving, and then and getting out into nature. And I feel like you're right. I love the idea of us being born and changing the world just with our presence. And the fact that we're born is like, I don't know, one in hundreds of trillions of chances, right? So even the fact that we're born, we are walking miracles, and we all have a reason and a purpose for existence. All of us, everybody that's listening does. And really, I think a lot of that purpose lies through service, through doing something positive for someone else. That is there's no better, more lofty purpose than that being on earth. It's not to make more money. It is to make someone else happy. It is to comfort someone else in pain. And, you know, this is not something that I thought about, Chris, or tried to perpetuate within my own life. Certainly before my six-year-old son died, I, you know, was living like everyone else, a little oblivious and thinking that there were people in place to take care of things that I was paying for with my taxes. And I'm just saying that, I mean, what we're learning now is that we have to take responsibility for what's going on in our world and be part of the solution. And so for me, that looks like the Choose Love movement, creating safer, more peaceful and loving classrooms, schools, homes, communities, prisons, whatever you have. And for you, it means introducing nature and animals. And I love that. So I know why I came to the table to do this. And it was through a terrible tragedy. You know, why are you, you know, this is like, I never knew that you could make a living at doing an animal embassy, or that's probably what I would do because I loved animals growing
neither
up.
Did, excuse me, Scarlett, but neither did my father, who was a CPA. So let me just put that out there.
Okay. Well, you know, when I was growing up, my dad worked on Wall Street, and that was really the only thing that I knew.
My dad probably sat next to him on the train.
Okay. Yep. He took the train into New York, and, you know, that's all that I knew. And I had this, you know, huge fear that I wouldn't be able to support myself. And so I went that route. Yeah. And you did too. And of course we've found our way here, which is, you know, literally in working in our own nonprofits and making a positive difference. But why? So you're saying that your dad was trying to steer you in a different way.
So I always was passionate about animals and knew, Scarlett, that I was on a mission. And from a very young age, I had decided that I wanted to be on television. because I watched Jim Fowler of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, who I know many of you out there listening will know Jim Fowler and Marlon Perkins. That show was unbelievable for me and really steered me to some degree, as did Marty Stauffer of Wild America. And until next time, enjoy our Wild America. And the man had this awesome reddish beard, and he would go out of his cabin where the show looked like it was filmed, and there'd be a wolverine that was like playing with a skunk or a mountain lion moving its kittens. And I'm thinking, growing up in Darien, I want to be that man, and I want to live in that cabin right there, wherever it is. But that was North America that he was showing us, and these other guys were showing us the world. I grew up in Darien, Connecticut. I fell in love with nature in my own backyard. The spotted salamander is my logo. It's a black, jet black salamander, about 4 or 5, maybe 6 inches for a female long. They have yellow spots. They only come up once a year for about 20 years. They're a mole salamander, so they live the rest of the time underground. My first spring in Darien, Connecticut was in 1975, and I was at the end of our dead end street wearing a little Yankees jacket that I have no doubt my father bought for me. And I was standing there and I saw a yellow spotted salamander in the middle of the road, and I knew that this was not a good place for that creature to be. It was dangerous, and I wasn't going to leave it there. It was a dead end street, so I didn't need to get a parent to help me to do it. But I do tell the children that I did most of the time when I tell the story, because I want to make sure that they're not going to do something dangerous. So I got that salamander, moved it out of the road, and explained to the children that I saved my first animal when I was 3, and I remember it. And it's one of the first things that I remember in my life. I was 3 years old.
Wow.
So I want these children to know that even if you're a child, you can do something good. And I say this on almost every program that I do. And why did I pick that yellow spotted salamander to represent my company? Well, number one, I loved amphibians, and a lot of people say they hate them. So that's one reason why I picked the yellow spotted salamander, because let's talk about that. Why would we hate a yellow spotted salamander? Because it's slimy? Well, if we got to know it, we'd know that it's not. But most people aren't going to take a chance to get to know it. And the kids that were with me on that day, they didn't rescue the yellow spotted salamander, because even at the tender age that we all were, many of them said it was disgusting. How can we love something if we're going to say that it's disgusting? And where are they getting that from? The other people that don't know what they're talking about that say that it's disgusting. And that often comes from the adults. So when I go into a school, I have to understand that the adults in the room may come with prejudice that are then going to impact the children that are in the room that may not have the prejudice. And I'm in the room to try to help the children to not be prejudiced. Let's go with that. And then the teacher says, I don't like frogs. Gosh, that's frustrating, isn't it? Because I'm here because I do. And I'd like to help your children to appreciate life, appreciate diversity. So how do I know that this stuff exists? Because the other kids that were there on that day that I saved the salamander, they picked up on the fact that I loved animals. They picked up on the fact that I loved amphibians. And then they started doing terrible things to them. And I don't know who's going to be listening to this podcast. If there are children listening to it, I don't want to talk about what they did.
No, it's adults. It's adults.
So injecting, I don't want to talk about it anyway. It's a bad memory, but this is what happened. I was bullied. How was I bullied? Kids were cruel to amphibians in front of me, and the adults didn't much care because they were amphibians. And what do a lot of adults say about amphibians? That they don't care for them. Gosh, that's no better than saying that you don't like them in front of a child. I don't think it's much better than saying you hate them in front of a child. You're saying that you don't care for them.
Maybe you don't understand them. Maybe you think they're potentially dangerous.
But this is what I'm trying to teach the children. I shouldn't be there to teach the adult this, right? But I have to deal with it, right? Because it comes up while I'm teaching the children that they might say that they hate something that I love. And of course, Scarlett, yes, that's what I work for. I try to tell the teacher or the other adult that is saying this in front of the children who I'm there to teach. The school brings me in to teach them. But then I have the adult that might say the thing that's negative that then I've got to deal with. And the teacher is there every day with these children. I'm only there for an hour. So who's got the better opportunity to get them to follow their lead? The teacher does. But I do believe that my message of love and compassion and empathy is stronger than that teacher's prejudice. But I wish that the teachers would learn in school that they should check their prejudice at the door if we want to help children to appreciate life, love life, and not pick and choose which life they love. Because if a teacher says they don't love one animal, then a child could decide they don't love another animal. But what I'm there to do is help them to appreciate all life so that they can look at each other and appreciate each other. Because if we can look at a frog, a lizard, a snake, a turtle, a rabbit, and see that they're all beautiful creatures, they're all worthy of respect, and every one of them is important to their community. The kids get this message. And so did the school administrators in Stanford when I went and sat with them and told the upper school coordinator and the lower school coordinator about my Creating Kindness Through Creatures program, which talks about each creature as a part of a community. And each creature plays a role in their community. They don't know what it is. They do not get to choose, just like they don't get to choose the way they look or feel. But they have a job to do. And if each one of them does their job, if each creature plays their role, the community functions the way it's supposed to function. So when we have breakdown in this, this is when things are going to cause problems in our community. And this is why I want these kids to be prepared so that they can choose a supportive role in their community. Because if we're not thinking about a supportive role, we may not choose one. Because you and I know, because we both grew up in Darien, that there are a lot of people that will choose choose an occupation that will provide them with a lot of resources, right? Great. But not all of those people are going to then share those resources, but some of them will. And this is what I want the kids to get. Time is a resource. Energy is a resource. Smiling. I do believe a smile is a resource. Share what you have to share. And if you can make people happy, then that is a resource that has a value that goes well beyond any money that anybody could pour at something. So I want to help kids to understand that making someone smile is a big deal. Making someone happy is a big deal. And if more people were trying to do that for random people, I know there's a lot of very unhappy people out there. And why are they unhappy? Because they're lonely, because they don't think that anybody cares about them. Well, I do. I do care. And I tell these kids that all the time. I just started working, Scarlett, with a place for boys with drug and alcohol addictions in Woodbury, Connecticut. And I'm so happy to be working with these kids. I'm sure that you and I both have seen plenty of lives that have been destroyed by addiction. I have had some challenges of my own in that department, which I've conquered. And I'm happy that when I go and I talk to these kids, I can say that to them too, so that I can have empathy and they can feel that. But I feel that I can have empathy for humans, period, because I am one. And I think everyone can have empathy for humans because we are. So let's have empathy for each other. Let's do what we can to help each other. Opening the door for somebody, just taking that moment. I can't tell you, Scarlett, these days, if I get to the gas station and somebody holds the door for me, gosh, that puts a smile on my face.
Me too.
And then that puts a smile on that person's face. This is energy, right? We can share positive energy and we can change the world in so many different ways. And I want these kids that I'm working with to think of their own ways, because I can do things my way. And if they want to do some of what I'm doing, awesome. And planting plants is one of the things that I'm encouraging, because that makes our community more beautiful, but it also is helping the environment. And what I'm trying to help the kids to do too, and this probably comes from my Boy Scout days, think about when you can do something that helps more than one thing. So if we're making the world a better place, there's a selfish component to this, right? It's my world. I want to make my world a better place. And I want these kids to feel comfortable with that idea. This is your world. So let's do something to make your world better. But let's start with what can I do? Because if we're going to look to other people to do stuff, gosh, I don't want to get political, I'm frustrated with how little is getting done to make the world a better place on a grand level. So it suggests to me that we need to start, and many of us have. Scarlett, I know you have. I have for years. And I also would say, Scarlett, that just so that I can keep the record clear, if anybody wants to make a donation to Animal Embassy, I'm not a nonprofit. I left the nonprofit world after years working in it and decided to create a business that does what I believe nonprofits are supposed to be doing, but I was very frustrated in the nonprofit system that I was in. That's nothing against yours, Scarlett, because everybody can create something and they can create it different. And I did. I created a business that does the work of nonprofits. My product is education. So I would ask that people put me to work, because if you put me to work, you're giving me the resources I need to care for the animals that I've rescued, but you're also putting me to work helping to empower children to want to make the world and then indeed make the world a better place in any way that they feel they can do it.
I love that. And, you know, you have made me think differently too, because I have to be honest, Chris, I might have been one of the people. And despite the fact that I am the choose love lady and I love animals, I have a whole bunch of them, I might have been one of the ones that said that I don't like certain snakes or spiders or in fact, I'm sure I've said that in my life.
Most people have. And I
yeah.
used to say, and Scarlett, I used to say that I hate mosquitoes. So I knew I was afraid of
Ooh, I
spiders. I
definitely
got
have
over
said
that.
that too.
Yeah, I think most of us can say that we have. So look, how could I then say that this person was wrong for saying they hate snakes and that person was wrong for saying they hate spiders when I used to say that I hate mosquitoes and I thought that I was all evolved, right? I
Yeah.
wasn't evolved enough. I am now. Well, maybe not. We're all a work in progress. There's no
We
doubt we
are.
can all be better all the time. But here's
True.
what I've now said to kids about mosquitoes. I don't hate mosquitoes. I just don't want them on me. Okay. So I like that, right? I don't hate them. I've got nothing against them. If they would just stay away from me, this
That's
would be
right.
fine, right? So here's what I do love. I do love spiders because spiders eat mosquitoes. Good for spiders and good for us and good for mosquitoes because overpopulation is never a good thing. There are wood ducks, one of the most beautiful ducks that we have in the Northeast. Some of you know them. Wood ducks are absolutely gorgeous. If you don't know them, Google it. Wood duck babies love to eat baby mosquitoes.
Ooh.
Countless migratory birds are coming through this area at this time of the year. Spring has already started for the migration. So
Ooh,
they're going
nice.
where? Up to the Arctic to do what? Eat mosquitoes. So look, lots of animals depend on mosquitoes. My yellow-spotted salamander larva, they eat mosquitoes before the mosquitoes get out of the water to fly, which means yellow-spotted salamander larva, which some people say they don't like yellow-spotted salamanders because they're gross, they eat mosquitoes. Let's love them. Frogs eat mosquitoes. Let's love them. Snakes
Yes.
eat mice and rats. Mice and rats carry ticks and fleas. Ticks and fleas carry disease. Let's love them. But you just might want to love them from a distance, like a bear, right? Let's love them from a distance.
Right, exactly. Oh, that's so funny. Well, you would like to know that the month of February, that's when we're recording this podcast, is officially Choose Love Awareness Month. And so we have governors across the country that have issued proclamations calling February, the entire month, Choose Love Awareness
Awesome.
Month. And that is so this year we focus on starfish moments. And
Cool.
starfish moments come from a story about a little boy walking down the beach, picking up starfish, throwing them into the water, and an older man's coming the other way saying, what are you doing? And the boy says, well, the tide's gone out, all these starfish are stranded. If I don't pick them up and throw them into the water, they're gonna die. And the older man kind of chuckles and says, oh, little boy, you know, I've just come from the other end of the beach. There are tens of thousands of starfish all over this beach. If you worked all day, you'll never make a difference. The young boy bends down, picks up the starfish, throws it into the water and says, I made a difference with that one.
That's
And
awesome.
yeah. And so I love your picture. I want you to explain that because we had a kickoff, by the way, with classrooms all over the country. We got on earlier this month and we talked about the amazing resilience of starfish and how starfish are so like us humans in that we get hurt and the body immediately begins to heal itself, and not just from physical cuts, but also emotional wounds as well. And starfish have an incredible resiliency and capability to heal. And it looks like from your picture that this is part of what the picture is about.
Yeah, so this goes back to my maritime aquarium days and soundwater days. I studied marine biology in school. I was a natural history major, but I had an emphasis in marine bio and wetlands and aquatic biology. So this is a way that I would teach the older kids about the amazingness of a sea star, because it shows in cross section without, I know you guys can't see this, but it shows one of the rays in cross section from the top. It shows one of the rays in cross section, you know, from the center, so that you can really see what is the sea star made up of. And I think that that's very helpful when we're talking to a kid about something, that's in place of a dissection. I love that. That shows what is inside without taking the sea star, because look, they're not collecting dead sea stars off the beach to do a sea star dissection. They're going to be obviously taking the sea stars. So that's what that's about, Scarlett. I use that to do some of my beach walks. I've got one coming up in Greenwich where I'm going to be taking North Street School. And I've done it the last couple of years to the beach because as much as I love bringing animals into the classroom, Scarlett, I grew up as a local naturalist and I love getting people outside in nature. It's my favorite thing to do. So if schools will bring me in first to do the in-school thing, great. I can connect them with life. I can connect them with empathy, compassion. I can connect them with the faraway places, adaptations, all those great topics. But then to be able to take that same class out into the field to go to the vernal pool where the yellow-spotted salamanders lay their eggs and then disappear for, you know, the whole year until next year, or take them to the beach in the spring to show them where diamondback terrapin turtles live on the estuary that we live on, Long Island Sound. And I've got some that will be released this spring. So that school will probably get to participate in the actual release of turtles. So I want kids to get that, you know, it's fun to catch things. I did it when I was a kid. It's not fun for the thing that's being caught. And I'm trying to get kids to be more conscious of what is the impact of what we're doing on the other, right? So if we can start talking about that with the impact that we have on the other being the animal, talked about it in Newtown yesterday at the community center, or not the community center, town hall, with my program. I was talking about the fact that I would catch salamanders, I'd catch frogs, I'd catch turtles, I'd catch snakes, I'd catch crayfish, I'd catch fish. I even caught a baby duck one time. Everything else I'd bring home with me. That baby duck really hurt my feelings because I saw how much I hurt it. I didn't hurt it physically, but it screamed, it cried, and it ran. And when it ran back to the water, when I put it down, it ran across, Scarlett, the water with its little flippers across the top of the water. Mom was scared. Baby was scared. That was the last time I ever did that. And I want the kids to know now. I take footprints. I take photographs. But I don't take animals from their home. And I say this to the kids this way. We wouldn't want anybody to take us from ours, so we shouldn't be taking them from theirs. I loved them when I was a child. There's no doubt about it. And I say that to the kids. But then I ask the kids, did I love them properly or did I love them in the right way? And the children easily say no. And then I ask them, well, why not? And they say, without me saying, they say, because you took them away from their home or their habitat or the wild. Any of those answers are perfectly spot on. But if you don't have a conversation with a child like that, then they're going to have to figure it out on their own. And it took me a long time to figure that out. Now, as an adult, I bring plaster of Paris all around the world, and I come back with footprints like this one that I'm holding up, which you can't see out there, but this is a mountain lion.
Whoa.
And then I've got grizzly bear, and then I've got polar bear.
Yeah, some people can see this. Some people will watch this on our website, cool. So they will see this. Wow.
Cool. So when I travel, so I've got hippopotamus footprints, and I tell the kids, this is what I take now. This is respectful. This is appreciating life. This is appreciating someone else. And if we can help a kid to do that with animals, why can't they do that with each other? And that's my goal, is to help children to see that compassion for someone that is not like myself. And if I can be that role model for these kids and help them to understand why that matters, why that's important, and how that can make a difference, that's my goal in this world.
That is such an important goal, and we need it now more than ever. And teaching the golden rule, basically, by using animals is brilliant because, you know, our brains are wired to judge. They're wired, and this is for our safety. Our brain's number one job is to keep us safe. So we're literally wired for judgment. And, you know, you walk down the street and within a split second, faster than you can blink, you have judged the people that are walking by. Are they dangerous? Do you think they're kind? You know, and all these judgments. And it takes awareness. It takes pausing. It takes a tremendous amount of curiosity to overcome the wiring that we have. And I think I see that we're increasingly living in a more fearful world.
Yeah.
And fear begets fear. What we focus on grows. And, you know, this is the other thing, Chris. I see that the way that we're trying to stop violence and substance abuse and mental illness is by focusing on the problem. And I use the war on drugs as an example of what a bad idea that is. I mean, focusing on the problem, that has just gotten us to where we are today with more overdoses ever before in the history of mankind and increasing. We focused a huge campaign on taking away the stigma of mental illness, and yet still we have a mental health crisis in our country, with 5,400 teens attempting suicide every day, and those are only the ones that we know about.
No, yeah.
So important that we teach these skills, tools, character values at home for sure, and in school, and have creative ways in which to do that, which is what really piques my interest with what you're doing with Animal Embassy, because it's made me think. I mean, obviously I'm focused on my mission every single day, helping and teaching kids how to take their personal power back by thoughtfully responding with love. And yet even I would judge an animal to be good or bad. And that really struck a chord in me, because if we do that with animals, we do that with each other. And that's not what makes the world go round. It's kind of also been part of my campaign to humanize even school shooters, which sounds ridiculous, but people say they're evil, they say they're monsters, but really they're human beings, and most of them kids, by the way, in pain and just not able to manage their pain. So I want them to identify with the humanity in everyone, see the light of humanity, see when people are struggling, like, and have the courage to reach outside of ourselves, even if we're not feeling good. That's when it really takes courage to offer that smile that you were talking about. It's really powerful, because it does start chemicals, feel good neurochemicals flowing in your brain. And by the way, if I smile at you, it's almost impossible for you not to
Not to
smile
smile
back.
back.
Even if you don't, those feel good neurochemicals are flowing in you as well. It's like the greatest free gift, most valuable gift that you can give somebody else, that's no cost, that is just, it could be life-changing for somebody else.
Priceless. So yeah, that, I was saying before I started to talk about the gals at the Stanford Board of Ed, and I sat with the upper school coordinator, lower school coordinator, and as I was explaining this program, Creating Kindness, to them, the one woman, she looked at me, and she's looking at me funny, and she really was making me uncomfortable, and she recognized that she was making me uncomfortable, and she says, "Chris, oh, I'm sorry, I can see that I'm making you uncomfortable." And what I was there to talk about was, how I use the animals to talk to the kids about being kind. And it's not a bullying program, because along the lines of what you were saying, Scarlett, telling kids not to do something doesn't work for everybody. That might work for some kids that are very good at listening when parents and teachers say, "Don't do this," but there are other kids who are not good at that and might do it quicker, as we know. So you tell a kid not to drink, well, that's not going to stop them from drinking, especially if adults are, right? Tell a kid not to smoke, well, you're not going to stop them from doing it if you are. So if we're not being kind, how can we expect them to be kind? And that's what I was talking about with these gals. And I said, okay, so I talk about the fact that each animal plays a supportive role in the community, as we've discussed today, and that each one of them is important to their community, and so are we. But we have to choose the role that we play. Plus, the animals don't get to choose the way that they look. They're born that way. We have choices in that department too. So why can't we appreciate them for looking the way that they look, because they didn't choose to look that way, and doing what they do because they didn't choose to do that way? It's what's they're born to do. And if they do it, they're supporting their community. So she's looking at me and she says to me, "I'm sorry for making you uncomfortable, but I can't believe what's coming out of your mouth. I've taught for this long. I've been a principal for this long. I now sit in this position, and I've never thought to use animals in this way." And I loved that, because I want this to be something that can make a difference. And if others aren't thinking about it, but she's thinking that this can make a big difference, hey, other administrators are going to as well. And they have. The problem is, I want more people to know that this program exists, but that's not a terrible problem because there's ways like this to help people to know that this program exists. And I want other people, Scarlett, as you have created overlays for all these different situations, the school, the home, because I was obviously looking at your site and what you do, which I love, and I'm so glad that we're now I hesitate to say teaming up, but hey, we're teaming up for this. And if there's more
absolutely
that we can do together, I love that
sure.
idea. But I love the idea of the overlay. And I've thought my Creating Kindness Through Creatures program is about diversity, about appreciation of life. An aquarium could have a Creating Kindness overlay, but I worked at the aquarium. They didn't. A nature center could have a Creating Kindness overlay, but I worked at more than one nature center and they didn't, but they could. So if I could create that, then that too could go around the country, and my overlay, kindness overlay, could benefit a zoo, an aquarium, a nature center, a classroom, because you don't have to have the animals to use the animals in this way. And teachers already do it to some degree, but it's old and it's tired. Kids know that butterflies and bees and hummingbirds are pollinators. Let's add geckos from the island of New Caledonia. Let's add bats in the desert. Gosh, let's expand this. We learn nocturnal creatures in kindergarten, but we never learn the word diurnal. It's what we are. Why don't children learn the word diurnal? The teachers look at me, they're like, gosh, I never knew that word. Why don't we know that word? Why do we all think that owls are nocturnal? Well, none of us have learned the word diurnal, so I guess we're going to stick with nocturnal, but not all owls are nocturnal. And when I say that, it's mind-blowing to some people. I thought they're all nocturnal. Yeah, because that's what your teacher taught you. Your teacher also in preschool teaches you that frogs are green, they say ribbit, they jump, and they catch flies with their tongue. Guess what? That's stereotyping. Why are we teaching children how to stereotype frogs in preschool? This doesn't make sense. When children can learn a new language easier when they're little, we're going to dumb down nature for them and tell them something that's not true, that frogs are green, they catch flies with their tongue, and they are all good at jumping. You know what? Frogs come in different colors, and so do humans. Frogs eat different foods, and so do humans. Frogs are good at lots of different things, and so are humans. Frogs can swim, they can jump, they can climb. There's even a frog that can glide through the air. But why do we teach children that frogs jump? Well, they do, some of them. So each one of the things that we've taught, frogs catch flies with their tongue. Maybe some of them, sure, yeah, but not all of them. So this is stereotyping. I'm sure that my preschool teacher did not mean to teach me how to stereotype in preschool, but what was she taught when she was in preschool? That owls are nocturnal and that frogs are green, say ribbit, jump, and catch flies with their tongue. Let's get more teachers to bring experts into the class. If we want to teach children about life, let's really, truly teach children about life, because we want children to appreciate life and grow up to do so, then we need to teach them the truth about life. And we shouldn't dumb it down unless we don't know how to do anything else. And that seems to be the case, because I can ask those five questions of any audience anywhere about frogs. They all give me the same five answers. We've all been taught how to stereotype frogs. So surprise, surprise, the kids were cruel to frogs in front of me to hurt me as a child. Gosh, this is terrible, right? I could have grown up to be a horrible human being because the grownups didn't stand up for me, because you know what? They didn't really care about frogs. They didn't care for frogs. So did they care that kids were hurting frogs to hurt me? No. So I could have grown up to be a really bitter, nasty human being. I could have grown up to lash out at others because I didn't feel like I got the support that I needed. My mother gave it to me when I came home crying.
Yeah, so fascinating. And I agree with you 100%. If there was a program in place, an overview program to set the intention when people come into these different environments to look at it through this lens, not just as a dispassionate observer, kind of oogling, you know, new animals, but actually to take them in as, you know, unique species that are similar to you, and to love them. That's just an amazing concept. And I really appreciate that. I do want to work with you going forward. I have some great ideas and I want to run them by you. But if anyone out there that's listening, and we have mostly educators, counselors, administrators, parents listening, how do they get in touch with you, and how can they start working with you?
Sure. So my website is www.animalembassy.com. We do have Instagram. That would be animal_embassy. I have a pig named Kuni Kuni. Kuni Kuni also has Instagram. That's at Kuni Kuni, K-O-O-N-E-Y, K-O-O-N-E-Y. That pig has quite the adventurous life. Then he's one of our traveling ambassadors too. Then you can also reach out by phone, 203-655-5404 is the cell number. That also reaches to my, sorry, that's my office number, but it reaches my cell. So if I'm out in the field, I'll still get your message if I can't answer. My niece does the bookings on the and the scheduling for me. She's full-time at an aquarium in upstate New York. She just did a program for 175 people at the Glove Theater in Gloversville, New York, where wow. My sister Kathy is the president. So I come from a family where we give, and we like to be involved with the community. So Shannon just did her first big program, 175 people. Very proud of Shannon. And so she can be reached at info at Animal Embassy when she's not educating herself. Okay. Or running the aquarium up there. She is scheduling for me. So I think that's, that's website, Instagram, Facebook, and Shannon at info@animalembassy.com.
Yeah, excellent. So we'll put all of these in writing as well in the description for this show. And I just want to thank you so much for joining us, and look for Chris and Animal Embassy within partnership of Choose Love in some way going forward. And we're just so happy that you were here with us and sharing all of this. Talking about kindness is something that is really kind of what we need today in our world. We need to focus on it. We need something new. I agree with you. There have been kindness programs out there for decades.
Yeah.
And we need something new. And this really has an incredible edge to it. And of course, everybody loves animals.
Yep.
And you are
not, but not all of them. And if I can get them to love all of them,
that's true.
Gosh, I think that that's the key, because we need to appreciate life. Appreciate life. And,
yes.
And all these animals that people would say, I don't like, I don't care for, or I hate, even worse, you know, for what reason? For what reason? So what is it? Scarlett, you said it right. I'm uncomfortable. I'm nervous. I'm afraid, right? That's what it is. But we don't like to admit these things, right? We feel like it's a weakness, right? So I think a lot of this is very psychological, subconscious stuff that we need to just get over, right? You don't hate something that you don't know. How could you hate someone that you don't know? I don't get that. I don't think it's truly possible. You could say it and you could convince yourself that it's true. And then what do you want to do to it? If you hate something, well, let's not go there. I don't want to even talk about that. But hatred is the last step before we do something terrible, right? And so hatred is terrible. So why would we say that we hate something that has done nothing to deserve it?
I totally agree. And I think a lot of hate comes ultimately from fear.
Yeah.
If we understood that, and if we understood that knowledge is the opposite of that and wisdom, then I think that we would work more on educating ourselves. So that's what we're doing.
Yesterday, sorry to interrupt you, Scarlett, but yesterday when I finished the program, what did I bring out last? The snake. I bring the snake out last. I want everybody in that room, all adults especially, to hear what my message is. And I want them to hear it repeatedly before the snake comes out of the box, so that they've got my message in their mind before that animal comes out, because I don't want them saying something that I wish they wouldn't have, whether I hear it or not, right? If they say it in front of their kid is likely to hear it, right?
I get that.
And you know that kids are hearing far more than they probably should from the news and things that adults say around them, but don't think that they're paying attention. They could be watching television. They still hear it. These guys can pay attention to many things at the same time. So anyway, I brought out that snake. I think almost every single kid in that audience, I gave them all the opportunity to come up and touch if they wanted to. And I had them all stand on a line, so it was nice and safe, so that the snake wouldn't get nervous. I can't have people surrounding me, whether I got a rabbit or a snake. I want it very organized. I want calm, and I want the animal to feel comfortable and safe, because that's what's going to help everybody else to obviously not have a problem. If the animal doesn't feel comfortable and safe, they shouldn't even be there. So I hold the head away from the kids. I think almost every kid in that audience touched that animal yesterday. And so those kids know far more about snakes than the adults that brought them, because a lot of those adults probably have never touched one. So the children know them better. So who's going to be better at loving them? The ones that know them the best. And kids are learning about them. And I see the difference now from when I was a kid, because there was a lot more silliness even among the kids. But I think the other part of it is I'm presenting it properly. So by the time I get to it, they're cool with it. If I started with it, they would feel like the adults, many of them, because they've heard the adults already say stuff. If I ask the kids, how many of you have ever heard somebody say that they don't like or they hate a snake? Every hand goes up. Every hand goes up. So I want to teach them that snakes are beautiful and that every creature plays an ecological role, including the snake.
Wow, that's so beautiful, Chris. And of course, that extends to human beings as well. And so Chris Evers, Animal Embassy, so happy that you joined us. We have to wrap up, unfortunately, but you will be seeing more of Chris. Please reach out to him. You see, he's an incredible presenter. He's animated. He's got incredible animals and an amazing message that can benefit not only your class, but you as well. So, and also change the world. I truly
make it global.
Make it
global. I want to go around the world.
That's right. Help us do that. Please spread his message as well as the message of choosing love. Thanks for joining us. And we will see you next time on the Choose Love podcast.
Thank you, Scarlett. Thank you, everybody.
It's all part of us. We can all choose love. It'll lift you up if you let it in. Let the heat.